This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Your numbers are 297-5633 locally in Baton Rouge and outside the area, anywhere you happen to be, 877-217-5757, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. In a stunning victory aided by scandal, Democrat Doug Jones won Alabama's special Senate election last night, beating back history, an embattled Republican opponent, and President Trump, who urgently endorsed GOP's former judge, Roy Moore, despite a litany of sexual misconduct allegations. The first Democratic Senate victory in a quarter century in Alabama, and as the Associated Press notes, one of the reddest of the red states. And with us to talk about this and more is Bob Mann, the LSU mass communications professor and also a former aide to U.S. Senators John Breaux and Bennett Johnston and Russell Long, as well as Kathleen Blanco, the governor of Louisiana, and a columnist for NOLA.com. Bob Mann, were you surprised at the outcome?
I can't say that I was surprised. I think most people thought that it was possible that Doug Jones could win that race, especially after the Washington Post ran its investigative piece on the accusations against Roy Moore and the teenage girls. But still, it's quite remarkable that a state like Alabama, which hasn't elected a Democrat, sent a Democrat to Congress in a quarter century, would do something like this. It's quite remarkable, and it has incredible and far-reaching implications for events in Washington, not only in the coming weeks and months, but for 2018.
Well, he is the only Democrat in the U.S. Senate in the Deep South, and you knew a time, as did I, when this was common. In fact, former Democrat turned Republican Richard Shelby, who is still in the U.S. Senate, was the last Democrat to win in Alabama, and he did not endorse Roy Moore. In fact, he said he wasn't even going to vote for the man. That had to be a crushing blow in the final days of the campaign.
I think that what Dick Shelby did was important. This was not a blowout win for Doug Jones. It was a close election, and that Shelby, the weekend before the vote, gave and you cannot question Shelby's Republican credentials, by the way, but that Shelby would give permission to wavering Republicans in Alabama to either vote for Jones or to not vote or write in someone else. Almost 2% of the vote yesterday was write-ins, had an enormous impact on that race. The amount of write-ins in that election was greater than Jones's margin of victory, so it clearly, I think, had an impact.
877-217-5757. Is this a new day in the South? Is it possible for a Democrat to win? Or is this an aberration? Some would say, Bob Mann, that this was somewhat similar to the John Bel Edwards' victory over David Vitter, that it shows that an acceptable Democrat can beat an unacceptable Republican, but it does not show that an acceptable Democrat can beat an acceptable Republican in the Deep South. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think that's not an unfair analysis of these two elections in Louisiana and Alabama. But I also think that it does show, at least in the next few years, as the tables, I think, get turned on Republicans because of their fateful embrace and association with Donald Trump, that having good candidates matters. I mean, there was no way that a Democrat could have won this election in Alabama without an acceptable or a good candidate. And that good candidate, then Doug Jones, decided to run back in the spring when it appeared that there was no way that a Democrat could win in Alabama. He needed everything to go his way, but he also needed to be acceptable. So I think it's a lesson to Democrats in Louisiana and throughout the country that you got to show up. The parties have to recruit good candidates, and they'll lose some, but they'll also win some. But they've got to be in a position to win, like Doug Jones was in Alabama.
Well, if Luther Strange had been the Republican candidate, this is something where President Trump, I think, is right. Now, he also said in a tweet that he knew that Roy Moore was going to lose. Well, I don't know why he was campaigning for him if he knew he was going to lose, but he did say that that's why he was for Luther Strange. If he had been the candidate, I suspect he would have won, Bob.
Yeah, that's probably right. I think that's I have no doubt that that is the case. This was a case of really bad decisions from beginning to end by Republicans in Washington and Alabama, and it began with Donald Trump picking Jeff Sessions to be his attorney general and thereby creating this vacancy. Now, in January or December of last year, it looked like you couldn't find a state where it would be less likely that a Democrat would take a Senate seat if you took a Republican out of the Senate. But that set off a chain of events that got us to where we are tonight, mm-hmm. or last night.
Well, Doug Jones will go to Washington as a senator representing the great state of Alabama. The term runs through 2020, and so he'll be there for the rest of the Trump term. And there is now talk that he will not be seated until another vote takes place on this tax plan. Is that fair, Poole, or is that just politics?
Well, first, I believe, Jim, that Jeff Sessions' term is up in 18. I think he's got to run in 18, but I could be wrong about that. I think there's going to be an election for Senate in Alabama
next year.
Yeah, next year, and I think that Doug Jones is going to have a tough time getting reelected to that seat, but between now and then, the Republicans have a one-vote majority, and they've got to, if they want to pass this tax bill without giving people like Susan Collins, the moderate senator from Maine, and John McCain and Jeff Flake and others a lot of leverage to make mischief in the Senate over this tax bill, they've got to ram this thing through in the next few days, and I think Mitch McConnell is going to do everything he can to do that, and without some unforeseen roadblock, I think they'll probably be able to do that. But next year, let's imagine there needs to be some technical corrections to this tax bill, which there surely will be. There were many technical corrections that were required after the 86 tax bill, which took like a year to put together and to pass, and that was very carefully done. They still made a lot of mistakes. You can only imagine the number of mistakes that are going to pop up in January and February and March of next year that are going to need to be fixed, and the Republicans are going to own this bill because it's going to be unlikely that the Democrats are going to want to bail them out, and all it's going to take is one wayward senator on the Republican side to prevent them from doing that, and maybe won't even take that, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, the technical corrections to this bill could be stopped by a filibuster, unlike the way that they passed this bill through the Senate in the first place. So it could be a very difficult time on immigration, on any number of issues that that Republicans care about. And this doesn't bode well for them in the coming months, but it really doesn't bode well for them in the 2018 midterm elections.
All right. I'm looking at Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. He was elected in 1996 with Mary Landrieu, by the way. Re-elected in 2008 and 2014, so the term does run through 2020.
Okay, so, all right.
So
he's got a couple more years to go.
Yeah, and that's key, because he'll be running in a heavy turnout presidential election. And Bob, despite all the attention of this race, fewer than 50% of the people in Alabama voted. Maybe fewer than 40%. I think it may have been over 30, but if it was, it wasn't by much. And that says something about what's going on in our world right now, is that people just are not getting out to vote.
Well, it's not surprising, given the state of our politics. It's, it's not a pretty business on its best day, but there's really not much going on in America right now in the political realm that inspires people. I do think what you saw in Alabama, though, was despite the efforts of Republicans in that state to suppress the votes of African Americans, and they've done a pretty good job of it, a lot of black voters came to the polls yesterday, and those black votes really made the difference. Now, it also was helped but there were a lot of defections on the Republican side. But ultimately, African Americans voted for Doug Jones almost unanimously. I think 95% to 97%, depending on looking at male and female African Americans. They made a difference, despite the fact that Republicans in that state and throughout the South have really tried to keep them away from the polls.
Yeah, in fact, I understand black voters voted in proportion more heavily than white voters did yesterday in Alabama. That is unusual, but it shows the significance of this election to the African-American community.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think that it shows, you know, my former boss, John Breaux, was running for the Senate for the first time in 86, and Republicans here tried to purge more than 100,000 black voters from the polls. It backfired on them and generated a greater black turnout, which helped Senator Breaux tremendously. And I think the same kind of dynamic was at play in Alabama in this election.
877-217-5757 or 297-5633. Email is talk@talklouisiana.org, and we'll go to the phones with Bob Mann. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing on her birthday. 877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge and talk@talklouisiana.org. For Bob Mann, the veteran politico who worked in government for three U.S. senators from Louisiana, John Breaux, Bennett Johnston, and Russell Long. He also is the biography of former Senator Long, biographer. And Bob teaches at the LSU Mass Communication School, the Manship School, and he writes columns. You can read him every Sunday in the New Orleans Times-Picayune and at NOLA.com. 877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. And Mr. Mann, I admire your, I appreciate your work.
Thank you, Phil.
DeVise, hi. Mitch McConnell had said that he's not going to, he would not be seating or swearing in the senator if Mr. Moore had won. So that basically the Senator Strange would still be in the Senate, and that would be the vote that McConnell could count on. I think that's what I understand that his plan is. And the other thing, I'm sorry, I forgot what the other thing.
All right, okay. Well, Phil, we talked a bit about this, and generally when these special elections take place, as Bennett Johnston, for example, he won a special election when Alan Ellender died. Generally, they push the guy right in, or the girl, whatever. But in this case, it's somewhat analogous to not voting on a Supreme Court nominee for 10 months. They're going to keep Luther Strange there as long as they can, it would seem, Bob Mann.
Well, yeah, so there's at least two things at play in here. Number one is just the certification of the election by Alabama officials that the Senate is not going to seat Doug Jones until they get official certification from the state of Alabama that the election has been certified, ratified, certain that Doug Jones really won the election. There is some talk that Roy Moore has not yet conceded, and he's talking about a recount. I don't think that's going to happen. But Alabama officials, who are all Republican, have every reason to drag this out as long as possible to give Mitch McConnell time to hold that vote on the Senate on the tax bill and get that thing passed before Doug Jones shows up. It probably will not be certified, from what I'm seeing this morning, until right before or right after Christmas, which means that by that time the Senate will be in recess for the rest of the year, and Doug Jones would not be sworn in until after the first of the year.
Well, a 20,000 vote margin is close, but it's not as close as, for example, Mary Landrieu defeating Woody Jenkins by 5,788 votes. That was a nail biter. But as we know, Woody Jenkins didn't let go for almost a year. He was fighting to be seated in the U.S. Senate. I can't imagine that happening in this case.
No, I don't think that anyone is. I haven't heard or seen anyone suggesting that there were voting irregularities yesterday that would suggest that that Roy Moore had more votes than showed up at the polls. I think the question is, according to Alabama law, as I understand it, if the margin of victory is less than half a percentage point, then there is an automatic recount, which would take a few days, a few weeks, whatever. But if it's close but still not within that margin, then the losing candidate must pay for the recount. So there still could be a recount, but I think Roy Moore would have to cough up the money to do it. And I think the question is, does he want to do that?
Well, he was a man who was engulfed in scandal in the latter stages of this campaign, and he denies the allegations made against him. The president, in an appearance over the weekend on behalf of Roy Moore, even questioned the alleged victim, who produced a yearbook to produce evidence of some kind of association with Roy Moore, inappropriate as it was. How about Donald Trump? Does he lose anything by Roy Moore losing this election?
Yeah, I think he loses a lot. I mean, I think the first thing he loses is this is the second election, at least the second election. Really, there are more, but this is the second major election since Trump was elected president in Virginia, now in Alabama, where his party has taken a thrashing, and it's been associated, he's been associated with it as either a repudiation of him directly or indirectly. And in Alabama, this was not a race where Trump was just taking a hands-off position on. He not only endorsed Moore and tweeted about him numerous times, but he held a rally in Florida about 20 miles from the Alabama line just a few days ago. So he went all in on this race. And you look at the exit polls in Alabama, it was kind of stunning how unpopular Trump is, even in places like Alabama. So this does not, in the reddest of red states like Alabama, that Trump is almost underwater with public opinion there, does not bode well for him in states that are more like the general population at large. And we certainly saw that play out in Virginia not long ago. But I think that when it comes to the credibility that people are assigning to women who are accusing these powerful men of sexual harassment or sexual misconduct or sexual assault, this also does not bode well for Trump, because those allegations had kind of receded into the background. But starting with the people in the entertainment industry and into the restaurant industry and into business and media and now into politics, these are not issues that I think that Donald Trump wants to talk about, but he's going to be forced to do so, I think, in the coming days. And it didn't help yesterday that he made matters worse by essentially calling the senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, basically called her a prostitute. And that is only going to add fuel to this fire, and it's not going to help Donald Trump in the end.
Well, you worked for John Breaux, who won a come-from-behind race to get a U.S. Senate seat against Henson Moore in 1986. In that time, of course, there was a popular Republican president, and Donald Trump is popular in Louisiana, and he's popular in Alabama, but he didn't have any coattails when it came to Roy Moore, and Ronald Reagan didn't have coattails when it came to Henson Moore. But John Breaux has credited a great man who died Sunday, Jim Brady, with his victory in 1986. Brady became better known as a federal judge and died at 73 after a brief illness. Bob, I know you thought highly, and that may be understating it, but you really were an admirer, as many of us were, of Jim Brady.
Well, yeah. Jim was a friend and for 30 years, and he was just one of the best. I was telling somebody last night, actually having a conversation with Senator Breaux about this on the phone last night, and we both agreed that some people, have one or two or three great accomplishments in their career to their name, and then there are people like Jim Brady who I think his legacy with the people who know him is going to be just a million small but meaningful acts of kindness and generosity. Jim was always the first person to call. He was the first person to reach out. He never forgot an anniversary or a birthday. important event in your life or a sad event in your life. And I always thought that Judge Brady was, and I mean this, and I've said this many times, not just since he left us, but he was really the kindest, most caring and compassionate person I knew. He was, and still, and will be, the inspiration and example for how we should treat people in our lives.
Dead at 73, he was a guy who was popular wherever he was, student body president at both SLU and LSU. He went to Southeastern as an undergraduate track star, and then at LSU for law school, and then became head of the Democratic Party in Louisiana, and he was the president of the overall association of chairs of the Democratic Party when Bill Clinton was elected in 1992. And Bill Clinton, of course, has credited Jim Brady with his success, and Clinton's the last Democrat to win a presidential election in Louisiana in 1992 and in 1996. We'll return and spend a few more minutes with Bob Mann. Your number is 877-217-5757. Now the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Allie Baltazar producing. Your numbers again, 296-5633 and 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. A few more minutes with Bob Mann, and then we go to Ernest Johnson, the head of the Louisiana NAACP. And before we part company, I certainly wanted to get your take, Bob, about the announcement from Governor Blanco, former Governor Blanco, that she is battling liver cancer, and of course has a very tough diagnosis, but as we know, she is a warrior.
Yeah, that's you said it. She's a warrior. That's the thing about Kathleen Blanco that those of us who know her well know, that she not only has a very deep faith and is sustained and has always been sustained by that faith and motivated by that faith. She's also a fighter, and you know, the thing that I remember after Katrina and after Rita and even after she decided not to run for re-election, she never stopped fighting for this state. She never stopped fighting to rebuild this state, to get the money from Washington that the people of the state needed to rebuild their lives. And till the very last minute that she was in office, she continued doing the job, showing up for work, giving it 100% or more. And I think that's an incredible legacy. We haven't always had governors like that, and I think we came to appreciate more and more as time went on what it meant to have someone like Kathleen Blanco, who had that kind of heart and that kind of commitment to Louisiana and its people.
Well, lastly, a question from Missy to you, Bob, about the significance of the Doug Jones win in Alabama. Does Bill Cassidy look at this and being up in for a re-election in 2020, and does he take note, or is this something that is viewed as just an anomaly and not something to get worried about if you're a Republican senator in the South?
Yeah, I think if you're a Republican senator in the South in a state like Louisiana, you probably aren't panicking about Doug Jones, because you're rationalizing this and saying, you know, it's this was Roy Moore, who had a million and one problems, and you know, I don't have those problems, so I have nothing to worry about. And that probably is a safe position to take, but you're also assuming that that things don't get a lot worse in Washington, and that Trump doesn't just drag your whole party down, and at some point people just have enough and start taking the position to pox on everyone's house. And I think that's the risk that people like Bill Cassidy and others in Louisiana have to take. It's a calculation. I think it's probably a safe bet, but it's not a sure bet.
Well, thank you, Bob Mann. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks, Jim.
See you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. We're joined now by Ernest Johnson, the head of the Louisiana NAACP, and it was an interesting night in Alabama, Ernest.
Yes, it was, Jim. Good morning to you and your listening audience. It certainly was an interesting night. I'm not sure in terms of your last guess in terms of the outlook for Cassidy and other Republicans. What we're seeing is a split in the Republican Party itself, where you're going to have the Steve Bannon wing. Steve Bannon went down there with with Moore, and you know, probably obviously hit a bad candidate, but it certainly is eye-opening that Steve Bannon wants to create another wing of the Republican Party. And when you polarize the Republican Party with the Democratic vote coming together, and of course it's something to be noted that the black vote was up very high in a special election. And it was higher than the vote that went out for President Obama in a regular election in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a number of things that's going on that could change the political landscape in this country. Not to mention the fact of the morality issue and the high standard that's being placed on individuals who seek the high office of senator or congressman.
We're talking with Ernest Johnson, president of the Louisiana NAACP. If you'd like to join us, 877-217-5757. For those who didn't stay up late last night, here's how it sounded with Doug Jones winning the election. Some would say surprisingly so. He was an underdog, although it was expected to be close, and it was. He won by about 20,000 votes. Here's Doug Jones at the podium stating to the world that he is now Senator-elect Jones from Alabama.
Thank you. Thank you. Everyone, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, my. Folks, I got to tell you, that I have been waiting all my life, and now I just don't know what the hell to say.
All right, that's Doug Jones, who obviously was excited. And Roy Moore, perhaps taking a page out of the playbook of my friend Charlie Malasaw, who lost to David Vitter and gave a bitter concession speech. Here's Roy Moore not even conceding the election.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I really want to thank you for coming tonight and realize when the vote is this close that it's not over. And we still got to go by the rules about this recount provision, and the Secretary of State has explained it to us, and we're expecting that the press will go up there and talk to them to find out what the situation is. But we also know that God is always in control. You know, part of the thing, part of the problem with this campaign is we've been painted in an unfavorable and unfaithful light. We've been put in a hole, if you will, and it reminds me of a passage in Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. That's what we've got to do. And he inclined to me and heard my cry and brought us up also out of a horrible pit, out of miry clay, and set my feet on a rock and established my goings and put a new song in our mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and hear it and shall be moved by that.
All right, that's Roy Moore quoting the Bible. In not conceding the election, is that sour grapes, Ernest Johnson?
Well, sure it is. You know, the night that President Trump won, Hillary Clinton immediately called and congratulated. I think that's just part of the honor that's part of the process. And it goes to the character of the person when you don't see that occur. And it should give people who voted for him second thoughts about whether he would have made a good, great senator.
How much do you think the allegations against Judge Moore played a factor in the outcome?
Well, I think they played a major role in the outcome. It made a difference in Al Franklin staying in the Senate. It made a difference in John Conyers staying as the oldest African-American elected congressman. I think it's having an effect all over. And it's time for people to come clean. You know, why lie about it? Because what happens is it shows that you're a hypocrite when you speak of high morals and you want the Ten Commandments and the courthouses and things like that, and then this come out in your past, and you acknowledge some of it, you don't acknowledge all, and then you come back and don't acknowledge all. I mean, each individual, you know, we live and die, and we have our own individual relationships with the Lord. And for those who profess to be really close to God, it just comes out as a hypocrite when these kind of things come up.
Well, as you mentioned and we talked, the African-American turnout was higher than the white turnout proportionately in Alabama last night. What is it that will get African-American voters to the polls in other elections, like the one we're talking about in 2020 in Louisiana?
Well, just looking at these elections, Jim, when Senator Cassidy won, he was basically running against President Obama. If you can recall the ads, they were really about President Obama and not necessarily Senator Mary Landrieu, who had done a great job for this state. There was no reason to get her out of office. So back in those days, President Barack Obama, as an African-American, was being used in various ads throughout the South, and people got elected who may or may not have been qualified. What's going to happen when they come up for re-election? The question is going to be, what have they done for the state lately? And they will be able to show the various communities what they've done in Louisiana, like Senator Cassidy, what he's done to help economic development, what type of jobs have he's been instrumental in creating, and that will speak for itself. I think one of the interesting pieces of the Roy Moore campaign was when he said the good old days for him was the days of slavery. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, Jim, want to overlook that we had the enslavement of black people in America not that long ago. It's been a little over 150 years since the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment was done. The 13th Amendment was to abolish slavery. And, of course, George Moore then also said, let's get rid of the 13th Amendment. He also said, get rid of the 14th Amendment, which was equal citizenship. And, of course, the 15th Amendment was the right to vote. So George Moore had also said he wanted to get rid of all of that. And I think that that resonated with the black community and that black folks said, we're not going back. And I think that with the issue of the accusations and the entire movement with women that's taking place in this country, I think all of that came together as a perfect storm.
877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. We're going to spend some more time with Ernest Johnson, president of the NAACP, after this two-minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar producing, and Ernest Johnson with us for a little while longer. If you'd like to join the conversation, we invite you. Always good to hear from you at 877-217-5757. Last night, Doug Jones won a close race in Alabama by about half of a percentage point, 20,000 votes over Roy Moore, the controversial former Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And it is a significant victory. President Trump put a lot of political capital behind Roy Moore, and Moore was defeated by a Democrat in a red state. And it's the first time in 25 years that Alabama has elected a Democrat to the United States Senate. The last time it happened, Richard Shelby was the winner, and he is now a Republican. And he refused to back Roy Moore and said he would not vote for him. And this may have played a big factor in the final days of the campaign. Ernest Johnson, this election was largely about personality. What are the issues that are driving the vote? What issues will we be hearing about in 2019 when we have a race for governor in Louisiana, and in 2020 when we have a U.S. Senate race in our state and a presidential election? What are the primary issues we're facing as a people?
And I agree with you, Jim, that it's really about personalities, because the biggest personality is serving as the President of the United States. And I think the Russian matter going to continue. probably going to heat up a little bit more. The women issue, in terms of this whole Mara thing, I think that's going to heat up. There were some more accusations came out on President Trump this week, and I don't foresee that going anywhere. And then, of course, it's going to just spread throughout the Congress and Senate. And I think those type of discussions will be around in 2020, not to mention immigration. And I'm not sure about this tax reform or tax cut or whatever it's called. If it passes, I'm not sure, because you hear different spins on it. I'm not sure what impact it's going to have, but that is probably going to be the last major piece of legislation that the president can come out with. So I think that'll be part of the conversation also.
Mm-hmm. Well, Roy Moore was perhaps the most controversial U.S. Senate candidate since David Duke, who ran for the U.S. Senate in the year of 1990. He also ran in 96, and as we know, he ran last year as well. But David Duke almost won in 1990. He was running against a three-term incumbent, Bennett Johnston, who would go on to win a fourth term, but it was a close race against David Ernest Duke. And that was a race where people largely were introduced to Duke, who at the time was 40 years old and had a lot of plastic surgery, was a good-looking candidate and an articulate one, but one with a sinister past. And it was when Bennett Johnston started focusing on that past that things turned around for him and he was able to hold on. Here's a memorable spot that Ali Baltazar has unearthed from the campaign of 1990, Duke versus Johnston.
I was strident and often intolerant in my youth.
His youth. That's how David Duke dismisses his past as a Nazi sympathizer, as a Klansman. But David Duke led the Ku Klux Klan as an adult.
There is no more truly representative symbol of the white race than the fiery cross. It is our symbol. White victory.
Still burning crosses in the night, still snapping the Hitler salute, not just as a teenager, not just in his 20s, as late as last year when Duke was 39. Here's what happened if you dialed the New Orleans number for the Ku Klux Klan.
David Duke's office.
David Duke is lying about his past. Don't trust him with our future.
You remember that one, don't you, Ernest Johnston?
Yes, I do.
Excuse me. Yeah, well, David Duke ended up getting about 45% of the votes in that race against Bennett Johnston, and that was his best showing. But he got over 60% of the white vote. Is that unsettling?
Well, you know, at that point in time, Jim, yes. What's that, about 17?
27. 27 years ago.
Now, what we have, and the other thing that occurred in the Moore race was the millennials, I think they call them, the millennium voters, young white voters, educated white voters, who a lot went with, I think Jones got a majority of those votes. And so if you think about it, we've seen the last of the baby boomers as a large voting bloc. In the country, and who got those old thoughts. I think when we look at the young whites that are coming up that have been in school with African Americans since 1970, when we actually started immigration in the state, I think we're going to see some things that's going to change, and it's going to look like, you know, how did it happen? But I just think time is going to solve all, you know, heal all these wounds. And I'm looking for a voter who's not necessarily voting along racial lines or voting with the thought, the old thought, but voting with a new thought that we all can work together, that we live in a diverse society, but we all can come together and accomplish some good things for our communities.
877-217-5757, still time to get in with Ernest Johnston. And Sean in South Downs asks about your thoughts regarding our junior senator, John Neely Kennedy, elected last year and quite possibly a candidate for governor in 2019. He's a former Democrat, won a lot of elections as a Democrat. What are your thoughts about him?
Well, I know Senator Kennedy personally. I recall when he started with Governor Romer as a Governor Romer's general counsel, we had the lawsuit going to integrate the judicial system to create all of the African American judgeship seats outside of New Orleans. And of course, he came into that case at the end of it when we were resolving it. So I've been knowing him for a long time. He knows how to do business. He knows the right things to say and do. And I think he would be a good candidate for a good governor. I think he has a good commitment. I I've come in as NAACP president not to put too much stock on Democrat or Republican, but look at the person and what they can and cannot do for the state. And so I don't really have any bad words for Senator Kennedy.
All right. What about Judge Jim Brady, who died Sunday? I know you knew him.
Great man. I got to know Judge Brady before he was a judge. Back when I was working with Ms. Rupert Richardson, I became president of NAACP in 95, and I served about 10 years working with Ms. Rupert Richardson as her vice president, first vice president and general counsel. And I had a chance to meet Judge Brady on some issues that he was working on as the head of the Democratic Party in Louisiana. We became very close, and I followed his career. It was a great loss in our community to have lost Judge Brady. I pray for him, for his family. I pray for his family that they will have comfort during this period of time, and for our community, for the loss that we have all shared.
All right. Well, Ernest Johnson, as you note, the victory by Doug Jones last night in Alabama was largely due to support from the African-American community. Something triggered a turnout, and Roy Moore has, of course, been a controversial figure in Alabama for a long time. But what will have to happen for that to be replicated in other places, including Louisiana?
I think it's a knowledge of how close Roy Moore as the poster child.
Yes, sir. Okay, I think we may have lost Ernest. Let's give him another shot, Allie, and if not, we'll part company because we are short on time. But it was a historic night in Alabama, and there is only one Democrat in the U.S. Senate, or there will be when Doug Jones is seated. And he won by about 20,000 votes last night. And Bob Mann was correct. The number of write-in votes exceeded the margin of victory. And presumably those were votes from Republican-leaning voters, for the most part, who just could not stomach Roy Moore. And one of those was Richard Shelby, the former Democrat turned Republican, U.S. Senator from Alabama, who didn't like Roy Moore and said he couldn't vote for him. He did say he was not voting for Doug Jones either. He submitted a write-in vote, and over 20,000 other people in Alabama did the same. And now in a state that is viewed as one of the most reliably Republican states in America, there is a Democrat going to the U.S. Senate. Now in Louisiana, the next Senate election is in 2020 with Bill Cassidy up for re-election. He won in 2014 with 56% of the votes. His major issues were his opposition to President Obama and his health care plan and the fact that Mary Landrieu had voted with President Obama, quote, 97% of the time. If somehow, some way, John Kennedy were to be elected to the U.S. Senate, his seat would also be on the ballot in 2020. We would have two U.S. Senate seats on the ballot at the same time in Louisiana. Last time that happened was in 92 in California, but it is a rarity that would only happen if John Kennedy were elected governor. That's going to do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, for Allie Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.